Hello, nature lovers. Welcome to the Loudoun Wildlife Conservancy podcast. This podcast is about wildlife, habitats, and happenings right here in Loudoun County, Virginia, with ideas and activities for you to get outdoors and explore nature. I'm Nicole Hamilton, and this is episode number 5. Today I'm going to do a reading from John Trott's book, The Virginia Naturalist. Thankfully, we were given permission to read some of John's articles here on the podcast, both by his wife, Lee Trott, and the Virginia Native Plant Society, who published John's articles into this great book. If you enjoy John's writing, you can buy the book, The Virginia Naturalist, through the Virginia Native Plant Society's website. Okay, so pause the podcast for a minute and grab a pen, because if you're interested in buying the book, you'll probably want to write this down. Okay, so here's the web address. It's www.vnps.org/chapters/piedmont/2006/09/virginia-naturalist.html. See, I told you you needed a pen. So let's see, on to the reading. The articles that I've chosen for today are about vultures, both black vultures and turkey vultures. Vultures are amazing birds, and these articles really just start to scratch the surface, but I thought they'd be a good introduction to learn about these really neat birds. We've also developed a fact sheet on vultures, and I'll post that along with this podcast so you can learn more. And we also have a Habitat Herald article that can be found on our website under the Habitat Herald archives. So you can read some more and find out more about these neat birds as they start to congregate more throughout the fall and the winter. So this first article is titled, Maybe Ugly, But Vultures Sure Soar, by John Trott. I work in my vegetable garden in late morning on cloudless summer days. A great shadow often passes over the yard. It is cast by a vulture passing between me and the sun. I look up and admire the smooth grace of this great bird that floats by on motionless wings. A different view of vultures presented itself at dusk on a recent late February visit to friends who live at the Foxcroft School near Middleburg. The darkening sky was full of the somber shape of vultures. They were coming in to roost in the grand old oaks on the campus. A vague sense of unease possesses many people when they see large numbers of black birds. These were big black birds. Had the sky been filled with white birds, egrets, for example, the reaction would have been different. I admit I was intrigued by the vultures and thanked my host for providing the show. He gave me a bemused look. This happens every day now, he said. They came here after being run out of Leesburg. That interest runs even to the vultures, and yes, to vultures in large numbers. I have had a number of postcards, letters, and personal comments asking me to write something about vultures. I suppose some of this interest can be attributed to the Leesburg problem and the national coverage it has received from the media. I have followed this situation with greatest interest and chuckled to myself at the idea of capturing the birds and transporting them 200 miles to southwest Virginia. 200 miles is nothing to a bird on the air power and great wingspan of a vulture. A transported vulture could return to Leesburg with ease. My hesitation in writing about vultures does not derive from lack of interest. The opposite is true. The big black birds fascinate me as they do others, and have done so since Europeans arrived on this continent. To write on vultures is a daunting task. There's much that is startling and fascinating to tell. Vultures are often referred to as buzzards. The word buzzard is English and came with our ancestors to the New World. In the British Isles, the word refers to a hawk, a budio, much like our red shoulder or red-tailed hawk. Vultures present a paradox. My admiration for them in the air is boundless. The power of the graceful flight is astonishing. On the other hand, their looks and food preference are repugnant indeed. But we must be grateful. What a stinky, messy world it would be were vultures not constantly alert to the food potential of a decaying carcass of an animal, especially deer. As the population of the white-tailed deer explodes in Virginia, so does the vulture population. With too many deer for the habitat to feed, they die from starvation. Disease spreads quickly among deer weakened by lack of food. Who hasn't seen deer dead beside the highways where they have been struck by cars? Overcrowding forces deer to wander onto roads in search of food. Dead deer provide food for vultures. Healthy, well-fed vultures produce more vultures. There are two species of vultures. The black vulture has a wingspread of 5 feet and weighs up to 6 pounds. The turkey vulture weighs only about 4.5 pounds and has a wingspread of 6 feet. Both are big birds with featherless heads. The adult turkey vulture has a red, featherless head. The black vulture's head is black. This feature is not too much of an aid in identification unless one is quite close, however. Who wants to get close enough to a vulture to see the color of its head? Besides, the immature turkey vulture has black skin on its head. It doesn't take too much imaginative thinking to understand that a featherless head is an advantage to a bird that pokes its head into the ribcage of a dead deer. Evolution has served vultures well. Both vultures soar in great circles on motionless wings as they ride on rising thermals of air warmed by the earth. For this reason, vultures don't get going too early in the morning and tend to stay in roosting trees until the air is warmed enough to send them into the sky. As vultures soar in circles, they are on the alert for dead animal life. Their eyesight is keen to the point of unbelievability. At 200 feet above the earth, a vulture can easily spot a dead creature as small as a possum. Carrion is the food of vultures. The older and rottener it is, the more likely they like it. Vultures are scavengers, the cleanup squad of the natural world. For nearly 200 years, ornithologists have tried to determine whether or not a vulture is guided to decaying animal matter by its smell as well as its sight. It was not until 1964 that an ornithologist proved, after 25 years of experiments, that a turkey vulture uses both sight and smell to find dead animal food. The black vulture depends on sight alone. When vultures sweep through the upper air in search of food on the ground below, they also watch each other carefully. When one sharp-eyed individual spots food and begins its descent towards the ground in smaller, lower circles, other vultures are quick to follow. Once on the ground, a number gather and fight over food with snarls, growls, and hisses. They also snort, much as a dog does, and for the same reason, to clear the nasal passages. The black vulture is the more aggressive and is usually successful in driving a hungry turkey vulture away, where it must patiently wait until the appetite of the smaller of the two is satisfied. It is difficult to determine the two species in the air. The difference is too slight for comparison. The turkey vulture soars more and flaps less, for its wings are longer than the black vulture. In sailing through the air, the turkey vulture often rocks gently back and forth. It has a long, narrow tail and holds its wings in a slight shallow V. The black vulture tends to hold its wings horizontal to the earth and has short, squarish tail beyond which the feet will often show. This species tends to flap its wings much more frequently. A sail follows the labored wing beats using momentum gained by the flaps. The black vulture shows white underneath the wings near the tips. Practice through much watching eventually aids the vulture watcher in determining the two species. With so many vultures in the sky, it would seem that their nests would be frequently discovered. The fact is, there is no nest. Vultures lay two large eggs on dead leaves or on the ground and hide them well in hollow logs. They also lay them in decaying stumps, under thick undergrowth, and even in abandoned buildings. I once found the nest of a black vulture in an old barn that was falling in on itself. All boys like to explore deserted buildings, and I was no exception when growing up in central North Carolina. The incubating vulture hissed at me when I entered and approached her. She jumped across the floor and onto a window opening and sailed out. Later, I returned and I found two unbelievably ugly young vultures covered by dirty-looking gray down. They were hatchlings, only of a mother or a father could love. I approached slowly, and when I got within three feet, both regurgitated. The smell was appalling, and I quickly left the way I had come. To a mammal in search of a quick meal with a keen sense of smell, like a fox or raccoon, this defensive device would be most effective. If regurgitation of the most recent meal, which smelled rotten in the first place, doesn't work in sending a predator elsewhere, the young babies will play dead. Most predators want live food. As I wrote earlier, evolution has served the vulture well. Reproduction with vultures is labor-intensive and takes a very long time. Courtship involves an awkward, lurching sort of dance by the male around the female. Then there's a courtship flight in which the two soar close together. With one slipping both under and over the other, this aerial display can be fascinating to watch for those of us with enough time and patience to observe it. Once the pair bond is fixed, the eggs are laid and incubated by both sexes for up to 39 days. After hatching, the young remain dependent on the adults for food for up to 2 months. Only then have they developed their wings enough to get off the ground and soar against the sky in search of food. Turkey vultures occur throughout the United States. They migrate from the northern states in autumn and return in the spring. During these northward migrations, this species soars at an altitude of 5,000 feet. It's a rare day when I don't see a vulture afloat across the sky. If there were none, how empty would be the sky? Maybe more important, the world would be a stinky and much more unhealthy place. I give vultures their due and admire them as lords of the air. And that is the reading from John Trott. So many thanks to John for writing that article and helping us raise awareness of about vultures. And as we head into fall and into winter, I suggest you just keep an eye to the sky and watch for these birds as they soar. They're really beautiful. By late December, you may see them roosting in large numbers around Loudoun. As referred to in the article, there have been some large roosts in Leesburg and some other spots around Loudoun County. And you can find them with as many as 100 birds or more, which is really a sight to behold. But just don't panic, just appreciate. Vultures join up in these large groups in the winter when they disperse, and then they disperse again as spring comes around. And many of these birds will migrate northward, while some of them will stay as fellow residents here in Loudoun. And I want to just point out that I speak about living with vultures from experience. Here at our house in Waterford, we've had a flock of about 120 individuals stay with us for a few winters, and they didn't cause any harm, there were no health hazards, and they were just simply beautiful to watch. I live on a cul-de-sac, and luckily my neighbors directly around us also enjoyed watching and appreciating them. So I'm hoping that maybe others will appreciate them across Loudoun as well. In past years here in Loudoun, we've had a problem with people misunderstanding these birds and not liking how they look, thereby wanting them to be evicted from their neighborhoods. Vultures are protected under the Migratory Bird Act, and as a result, towns wishing to disperse the birds have to get a permit from the USDA. Unfortunately, the USDA doesn't enforce any serious guidelines, and permits seem to be given out to whoever asks for one. With the permits, towns are given permission to first try pyrotechnics to disperse the birds, and if that doesn't work, then they're allowed to kill a certain number of birds and hang them from trees in order to disperse the flock. I remember from last year, I believe the town of Middleburg had a permit to kill up to 200 vultures, when the fascinating thing about that especially is that on our Christmas bird count, I don't think we counted more than 86 in total for the count. So there are some very large numbers that could have been killed last December and January. From my point of view, this is very barbaric, and it flies in the face of teaching our children further respect for wildlife and the interconnectedness of all of us. I could truly do an entire podcast on how wrong it is for us to be trying to evict the vultures, but I'll spare you that for now. I do invite you to visit our website for information and newspaper clippings about the vultures of Middleburg and Hamilton from last year, as well as our response to help the towns educate citizens on vultures and their life cycles and help everybody really understand the unique attributes of these birds and how they fit into our ecosystem. You can visit www.loudounwildlife.org and click on Actions and Issues from the navigation bar, and then you'll see the Vulture Report under Past Issues. I really believe that through education, people and wildlife can live in harmony. So that's all for vultures for today. A few updates on programs and activities that are coming up. This Saturday, August 16th, we have two events. The first is a bird walk at the Dulles Wetlands, where we'll look for all sorts of shorebirds like plovers, herons, various ducks. This walk is limited to 12 people, so if you'd like to come, you'll need to sign up in advance, and you can do that through our website. Just go to www.loudonwildlife.org and click on Programs and Field Trips, and click over to August, and you'll see the listing. The walk starts at 8 o'clock and will finish up by 10 o'clock, so that you can then get over to our second event, which is the Dragonfly Walk at Banshee Reeks at 10:30. This walk is led by Andy Rabin, and it's great for all ages. Andy will net dragonflies and damselflies so you can have an up-close look at them and see all of their amazing features. So that about wraps it up for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it, and thanks for listening. We'll see you along the trails.